And we're back for the second part of our deep dive into the Louisville football program with good friend of the show, Keith Wynn, to talk a little bit more about the recruiting class and the success the Cards are having right now in the class of 2021, as well as take a little bit of a look at the 2020 season. Obviously, expectations are sky high.
So looking forward in terms of, you know, who could be the next, you know, big fit like a Henry Bryant or like a Dorian Jones, you know, I mean, you just recently published, but no, you wrote an awesome, you know, windbag wish list on offense. And so I wanted to ask you a couple questions about it. Now, obviously there's a couple big, you know, quarterback recruits that we keep hearing the same names over and over. And one of those is I'm not even, you can say it because I don't want to mispronounce his first name because I'm terrible at that. So I would definitely butcher it.
I'm going with Shadur.
Okay.
Shadur Sanders. I don't know either, to be honest with you, but I'm pretty
either
sure.
Way.
Sounds right.
Yeah. So Sanders, and I've heard Chaden Peary. That's another one. So, I mean, what are all the guys we're in on, like you're talking about? Like they're in on some really, really great quarterbacks. They're in on some really, really elite position guys. So what do you see as like the trend from all three? You know, like are they each a little bit more unique than you would have thought, or do they all kind of fit a similar mold like what you were talking about with Satterfield and what he envisions in a quarterback?
So a quarterback especially, I think it's a mold. I think they have a specific type of guy, and it's really interesting because what we saw from Mikael Cunningham at the end of the season, that's it. Like that's the, you know, put him on, that's a statue. That's exactly what they want. Is, hey, we just need this guy over and over and over again. It's a guy who obviously can make the throws, can throw the ball down the field, and is athletic enough to extend plays. They're not looking for necessarily Lamar Jackson, hey, we can add these running plays to the offense, which they were able to do with Mikael because he is that kind of athlete. They want a guy that, hey, kind of like we saw with Evan Conley, with, you know, a little bit of deception, they can have some running plays with him. But really it's, hey, can he get away from pressure, extend the play, or maybe pick up 5 yards if need be? And I think Shadur Sanders is exactly that. I really like his game. I like his – it's funny because you see these guys who are obviously privileged. He's got a dad who is a Hall of Famer. He has access to this, that, and the other. He has a flair about himself, which, you know, I don't really mind. I mean, if you know you're good, you're good. Yeah. But I think, you know, you really kind of get into the research on him. He works hard. He does a lot of off-season stuff. He has the quarterback coaches that help him improve. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think when you look at the top quarterbacks, they always do the extra work. I think it's understandable that people might be a little bit leery, though, because, you know, he's kind of got the flair and whatnot. But I like him a lot. I think he's a little bit more consistent than Chaden Peary. But I think Peary's a little bit underrated. I watched him play. He's a much better runner than I thought, and he's got a bigger arm than I thought. So,
yeah, I watched his film. Holy crap, that kid's got a cannon.
Yeah, and I think they're both very good. I think they'd be good fits because they don't need a guy that's going to come in and play right away. Unless, even if Mikael Cunningham were to leave early, they still have options there. So you don't need necessarily a guy that's going to come in and light the world on fire. You need a guy that fits what you do. And I think both of those guys fit from an athletic standpoint and from an arm talent standpoint. And I think they're in good shape there, just like they are with a couple different position groups.
Who's the guy outside of quarterback that you want to most see offensively in the recruiting class?
Oh, Amari Huggins-Bruce.
Yeah, which I knew that was going to be the answer. Yeah,
he's like it's like one, and everybody else is like way down here. I mean,
you have definitely become the leader of the fan club on that one. Oh, I see that. Yeah, and a couple weeks ago, I'm like, didn't that guy play for Clemson? Because the name, I don't know why I thought that. But then I started looking into him. I'm like, okay, all right, this is the guy. This is the guy right here.
So we talked. So you talk about building on recruiting based off of what recruits will see on the field for you. So a big issue under Petrino, in my opinion, was they had guys that became stars, and they were never able to capitalize on that with their recruiting. Whether you go back to James Sample and Gerard Holloman, who were really good safeties, both went in the NFL draft. Holloman won the Thorpe, led the nation in interceptions. They didn't pull in elite safeties or even extremely good safeties based off of that. partially probably because those coaches are gone and whatever well, may and be.
The crazy thing about that, I actually just wrote about this a couple weeks ago before Ben Perry committed, was if you look at the safeties before that, it was Calvin Pryor and Hakeem Smith who were better. And right. they, you know, you talk about Holloman and Sample were both only here for, what, 1 year? Yeah. Like, they had four straight years of two safeties that played at an NFL level, and then they followed up with Josh Harvey Clemens, who was a transfer, and after that, it just fell apart.
Yeah, and that was a big issue under Petrino. They weren't able to build off of that. I think that you look at Amari Huggins Bruce, and it seems like he's trending on Rivals to commit to Louisville. 247, you haven't seen that yet. People are still sticking with their Virginia Tech pick so far. But that is what we should be seeing from this coaching staff. You get a guy like Tutu Atwell who lights the road on fire. There should be another guy behind him that says, hey, I want to go do that too. And that's what Amari Huggins Bruce, that's the potential there is that, hey, once Tutu leaves, you have another guy that fits. I mean, you know, I'm going to say fit until my, you know, until I like pass
out. You sound
out.
Like Scott Satterfield with the word culture. Like, you just can't stop saying
it. Right. But I mean, you can really look at it as simply just that. You just plug another guy in who has the same athletic profile. Huggins Bruce is a little bit taller, but he's a thin guy, but he can make people miss. And that's one thing that I like. That's one thing that we haven't really seen from Tutu Atwell. He can run past everyone. Well, Huggins Bruce has that shiftiness in the open field, makes guys miss, anticipates tacklers well. You see all that, and that's more of a Rondell Moore kind of guy where, you know, more of an open field space player. So, you know, you there's a potential there to get a guy that, all right, we can plug another guy in. They have Jordan Watkins, who is a speed guy that I think can play the slot like 2-2 and can outrun people. Now you're building on what people see on the field. And you see that at quarterback, too. You look at the interviews that Shedeur Sanders has done. He talks about how much he likes how Frank Ponce does things and how he coaches. That's building on what you already have. And I think there's a potential to get a really explosive receiver there. The kid is electric. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I think it's very underrated. I'm kind of surprised he's not, you know, blowing up more and getting bigger and bigger offers, but I'll take it. I mean, you know, I think he's a really great player.
And you could make the argument, Alex, you tell me what you think here, but you can make the argument that Louisville is going to be a big winner of this pandemic recruiting, because I'm curious how many of these guys that they're going to get in the fold, if they went to the traditional camps and went through everything, how many they'd lose because they just blow up.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about Higgins being exactly that, a guy who they'd be in a matter of a few weeks, you could see, you know, LSU, Georgia, Alabama start getting involved for players like that after they dominated camps and they have them come in. Louisville lost a ton of guys, it felt like, last year. I shouldn't say a ton, but several. And, Alex, what do you think? I mean, they're getting guys who aren't going to be able to get the normal, you know, recruitment level and publicity that they would get with these camps. Like, don't you see where Louisville could kind of sneak in and steal some players in this year alone that they probably shouldn't have in any other year?
I think the big viewpoint when all this started to go down was that this was going to hurt Satterfield and them and a lot more than other programs, because, you know, I think that's around the same time they started maybe like one or two guys they were in on, like, you know, picked another school. And so they were like, oh my gosh, like, this virtual recruiting, we're not that good at it. Obviously it's not working in the first couple weeks. Well, I think everyone, to your point, just kind of missed the mark of, I think this helps us tremendously from the aspect that other programs are also having to deal with this right now. So you have kids that are not able to travel and see these other camps, see these other schools. And the fact that we're not doing a bad job, even with the virtual stuff. I mean, you know, I think the staff has been more plugged in than any staff we've ever seen besides, you know, the new basketball staff. But I would even say they've gone a step further, because I follow a lot of the football coaching staff. Those guys are on, I mean, every platform you could think of on a daily basis, like through Twitter, interacting with each other, like through videos, challenges, whatever it may be. You know, they're clearly showing the bond even virtually. And I think that's speaking to a lot of the recruits that are starting to pick up on that. But just to wrap up my point, right now on according to 247, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, five of the seven commits so far in 2021 are a top 30 player at their position, is what it's showing.
So I mean, nice.
I mean,
how about that for a stat?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing about it is, when you look at recruiting rankings, sometimes the position rankings kind of get lost because you don't really think about it. Like when it comes to basketball, that gets noticed a lot. You know, hey, you got a top five point guard. He might not be a five star, but hey, he's one of the top five in the country. That you see that more in basketball, but it gets lost in football because really everyone looks at it because there's so many players. It's really hard to kind of break down. But I mean, yeah, I think that Ben Perry's what, number 29, I think, and Braylon Oliver's number 28. I think it's safety right now. And, you know, I think that, you know, you look at some of these guys that are getting, you know, and I think there's a potential to kind of go back to your point that if these guys were going to go to camps, they were going to blow up, whether or not just be the guys in the class, but some of the targets. I think Jarray Williams, who's out there in Seattle, you know, I think there's obviously a connection with his dad being, you know, T. Will and playing here. I think he's a guy that if he had the camp circuit this summer, I think he was going to blow up into a huge prospect. Because one of the big things you're looking at now is, like, teams are looking for these guys that are kind of non-positional, where you just bring them in and, hey, we'll figure out where we're going to play them when they get here. And more in the mode of maybe like an Isaiah Simmons or Derwin James, where if you can get these big jumbo athletes who are also athletic, you're going to try to develop them, and you'll just figure out where you're playing when they get here. And I think Jarray Williams is that kind of guy. And he's a guy I'm really excited to hopefully he's going to pull the trigger here soon and join the class like everyone's kind of predicting. But he's a guy that, I mean, they can probably put him at four or five different positions. They'll just figure it out as he grows and gets bigger and where they maybe need him. And I think that's a good thing. I think you're seeing that. Ben Perry's another guy. He's going to grow, and they're going to put him an outside linebacker, that card spot. He's going to be a guy that's up in that 220 area and still be able to keep that athleticism, keep that speed. Now you've got what they're looking for in a sense of maybe a Rajay Burns who's also 3 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier. That's what they need. You need more size, but you want to keep that athleticism on the defense.
Well, and Keith, one thing we talked about a long time ago that you kind of brought my attention to, you know, when everybody, because every year it happens, it's hilarious that, you know, you look at these class rankings when it comes to recruiting, and it's all dependent upon, you know, one, how many guys you even take or need. Mm-hmm. So you've always stressed the fact that you've based it off of the actual, you know, rating per player.
Yeah.
Like the average rating. What is the average rating? Because that kind of shows you the talent level right there. Not the overall class rating as a team, but what are the individuals? And just to point out, last year, I think in Louisville's class, we had three guys. One, two, three. Yeah, three guys that were, an 87. Two guys that were an 87, one guy that's an 88 in the entire class. Mm. This year, out of seven commits, we already have three guys that are 87.
Yeah.
And one of them almost an 88, who's probably going to keep going up. So, I mean, some of these guys are probably still going to get a bump. But just in the first seven guys of this new class, we're already seeing the heightened sense of ratings, if you even want to base it off that. So there's a lot of different ways that you can say things look encouraging from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, and I mean, those ratings matter. If you really get into it, it's kind of nitpicky. Some guys are a few points higher than another guy, whatever it may be. But I think that, you know, it's a good way to really judge it. You know, when it comes down to it, the top programs in the country have the best players. They're rated the best. You can't get away from that. So,
it makes it easier to look at the numerical trend year over year of the class as well.
And I think off the top of my head, I think four or five of those guys would have been in the top half of last year's class. And that's where they're starting. That's their base.
Right.
There's the potential. They still need to get those guys like the Corey Conners of the world, like the Travion Fords of the world. But at the same time, if the bottom of your class or the bottom middle of your class is around where they are now, that's where they need to be. And I think that they have a possibility of getting there. There's still plenty of guys that they're in on that are four stars or will be four stars. And that's another thing that kind of 247 and Rivals are the main two sites. ESPN is kind of the redheaded stepchild out there doing their own thing, playing.
We do it too, guys. Don't worry.
They're the guys playing with the dandelions out in right field or whatever. But, you know, it's part of their composite rankings. 247's going ahead and actually re-ranked their guys. They're doing evaluations based off of film. There's, you know, Bud Elliott joined over there. He's an unbelievable college football mind, in my opinion. Does a lot of good stuff. He's the guy that came up with the blue chip ratio, which is just amazing. I mean, I love the way the guy thinks. Well, he joined 247, and they decided to kind of re-rank their class. Well, Rivals has decided not to do that. Though they've re-ranked some guys, but if you're talking about guys down in the Deep South, they've just not even done anything with those guys. So you might look at some of these guys they're getting, and those rankings are going to change. And you might see a guy like Braylon Oliver who has these great offers. Well, his ranking hasn't really changed since he picked up some of those offers. That might change down the road. He might be a four-star guy that they get in this class. So there's just so much to go. And like I said, you know, we were talking before we got on, it's so early. It doesn't seem like it because everything's off, you know, everything's kind of crazy now, but it's May. I mean, we're way ahead of everything right now. Things are going to change a lot when it comes to the rankings and the ratings. But one thing that doesn't change is the film's going to be the same. And you see these offers, especially these legit offers. A lot of kids get offers that are just, hey, it's an offer, but that staff still sees something in that player. And if you've got kids that have these great offers and their film shows it, that's kind of where I'm looking when it comes to evaluating these kids and how good they're going to be in the class. And I like them. I like them all. I mean, you know, you look even at Vic Mullen, who doesn't have a lot of film. He's out there playing against kids that are way smaller than him. You see the traits. He has great hands. He can go up and catch the ball in the air. He can track the football. And then as a blocker, he definitely shows the skills. So, I mean, they're identifying guys that they really like, which I think that was a big thing last year. And, you know, you see some of the recruiting guys are kind of trying to make fun of the staff that, oh, they like these guys. This is like they're getting these guys on campus last year, seeing them in person and saying, hey, we want you. Right now, they can't get them in front of them, but I think they're using the virtual visits really well. They're getting to know these kids. They're trying to vet them as best as possible. And I think the guys are getting, they look good. I mean, that's all I can really say about it from my standpoint, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a good point because I don't really see any sort of like out of left field head scratcher from these seven so far. Because like everyone you've said, either if they're not a top 30 kid, they definitely fit what they're looking for. So, yeah. I mean, they're definitely on the right path in my mind.
And yeah, I've been doing a lot of research with these posts I'm doing and watching way too much huddle video. But that's the thing. Even the guys they're targeting, not even the guys they've gotten yet, I still haven't seen those guys that just seem like a complete reach. Like, hey, you know, like I'm just not seeing like this guy definitely doesn't have the speed or, you know, he can't chase down plays or, hey, he doesn't really play the ball in the air. You see it. Every guy fits. And I think that's the thing. Like I said, they're giving out a lot more offers than I expected them to give out. But most of the guys they're missing on are the guys at the top level. They're going after the top guys. And to go back to a point earlier, even when they're missing on guys, they're not missing on too many guys that are going to questionable schools. You know, the ones that are staying home. You know, but the guys they're going after, they have the big offers. And when you're going against the big guys, you're going to miss on some of those guys, which is, I think that's what we want as a fan base, is for this staff to target the top guys and really go after them, because you're going to hit. If you hit on three of those guys, that's great. I mean, that's unbelievable. If you're looking at 40 guys that are top players in the country, you hit on three of those guys and you beat out these top programs for them. I mean, that's something that we haven't really seen. So I think that's a positive. It just leads to a lot of at least some frustration, you know, where you miss on a guy. But like I said, I mean, you miss on a guy like Corey Kiner at LSU, and I was just like, wow, you know. But at the same time, at least you're losing out to a team that just came off a national championship, as opposed to, you know, some random like Pitt or something like that, you know.
Yeah, those recruiting losses definitely don't hurt as bad as in basketball when Louisville loses to a Duke or a Kentucky or an Arizona, because you feel like you're kind of, you know, you're lucky to be playing with the big boys at that point. Like that, a Louisville player, a Louisville recruited player would be, you know, somebody that LSU is coming after. You kind of take pride in that because it's just not very often. Louisville finds himself in a very different position football recruiting than they do basketball. let's talk a little bit about 2020. We don't have a ton of time left. We're going to have to devote a whole nother podcast to the 2020 year. And I do want to get into some mailbag questions. So I don't want to spend too much time here, but in your opinion, if you can pinpoint one position in 2020 that you think you're going to see the most growth and the most elevation, what position is it? Offense or defense? It doesn't matter. What's the one position?
Ooh, defensive line.
And why is that? Like, talk a little bit about that.
That's my I don't know if it's a hot take or what, but like I think that that's the spot that they struggled really badly last year. They lost guys there from last year, but I think they'll be better. I think they're a little bit deeper. You're bringing in guys like Jadarian Boykin. You're bringing in guys like Yaya Diaby. Two guys I think can play early. And I like the young guys they got. I mean, not just Henry Bryan in the middle. I think Jared Dawson can come in and play. He's got the pedigree, in my opinion. I like watching him play. I feel like he can get on the field early. And defensive line, what we're going to see more than anything is that rotation. It's not necessarily just for the top three guys that are playing. They need guys that are two and three deep to come in and be able to contribute. I think that another guy, Zach Edwards, they saved his redshirt last year. The little bit that he played, you know, you go back and watch him. I think it was a Virginia game that he played a handful of snaps. He had two back-to-back plays where he made the play. And to me, that was just that little bit that he showed. If you can build on that, I think they will. That's a guy that I think can come in and make some plays. And I think they have more guys, and that's what they need. They had plenty of talent at the top level last year. They need more guys to be able to come in. And when those guys aren't on the field, they're still going to be okay. And they weren't. That's what they didn't have last year. So I think they're going to really improve there.
Yeah, it's funny when we look at the couple of questions that we got in terms of trying to solicit, you know, people trying to get your expertise here. They're all defensive questions. Like literally, everyone wants to know about one position. It's the defensive line, because I would make the argument. You could tell me I'm wrong. You know a lot more than I do. But I thought defensive line was the worst group out of all of them last year. And I thought that we'd see a little bit more because they just had so many guys. I think that. Maybe I fell into the trap of every player Louisville gets is a good player, and they're going to develop into being a good player. And you look at a guy like, you know, I don't want to call out any names of somebody who underperformed, but like I expected Malik Clark to get a little bit more run. Thurman Gaithers, like some of these guys who we were super excited about 3 years ago, and you didn't see it. But this year, you talk about who they add. You talk about Boykin. You talk about Jared Goldwire is kind of addition by subtraction, in my opinion. Like, I think he's going to elevate that position to be the next big one for Louisville.
So here's the thing that I think that we've kind of missed out on, and we probably don't talk about enough, and it's coaching and development. And I think that there's no position group from the previous staff that was worse off from a coaching standpoint than the defensive line. They just did not have adequate coaching. And
it's so funny. He was the only qualified coach that you could point at and say, okay, it makes sense that he would be there.
Exactly. But they didn't recruit well there. And on top of that, they also didn't develop well there. I think we're going to see that. I think Malik Clark is a guy. They've got up to 290 pounds. They're talking about playing him inside. Now you have Jared Goldwire and Malik Clark. Maybe Malik Clark takes that next step as a defensive lineman. You have Yaya Diaby coming in. They need pass rushers. They didn't have that last year. Now you have a guy who's better at that. Jadarian Boykin also. Maybe they have that better. That's a better part, because now they can change guys out for situational things better than they were last year. Let's be honest. G.G. Robinson was a good player for Louisville. He should not be a third down pass rusher at the end spot. And that's what they had to do with him, is move him from nose to end and have Jared Goldwire, who also isn't necessarily a pass rusher. When they had their pass rush, their dime package in, That was what they went to rush the passer. You've got to have more options, and I think they're going to have that. And now you have coaches that can really work with that, and then it becomes development. And it might not be this year, but I think going forward, they're in good shape to get better there.
I definitely think GG got a bad rap by Fairweather fans from the fact that just looking at the defense and how much, you know, how many points they allowed. But to your point, Gigi did phenomenally. It was just like we said, like the lack of depth. I mean, it just wore down, you know. Yeah, like you can't.
And when you go, when you look at that and you go and you look through a whole season, you have Gigi Robinson playing three downs over and over and over. That's not normal. You don't want your nose tackle playing all three downs. You want on third down for him to come off the field because you're in a pass situation and you've got the lighter, faster guys in there. Well, he was the best option they had, and he did the best he can do. Right. But over time, yeah, he's going to wear down. And that's you got to take all that into account. And now that they have more options, they should be able to rotate guys, do a little bit better with that, play different guys on third down, and maybe they get better there. And I think they will, personally.
All right, so this next question, it's a two-parted question. First, what is Mikael Cunningham's ceiling for 2020, and should we be disappointed if Louisville goes 8-5 or 9-4? You can start with McKellen.
You know, it's weird, man. I another thing I'll just openly admit, I just didn't see it with Mikael Cunningham. I thought that he was a runner. I didn't really think that he would ever develop it as a passer. I'll even say halfway through the season, I was like, I don't think he'll get over these natural instincts to run with the football as opposed to standing in the pocket. And sometimes he kind of keyed in on 2-2 too much. Honestly, as a ceiling, I think he'd be a guy that has another really good year, potentially leave early for the draft. You know, he's going to be a redshirt junior. You know, he's got the deep ball down. The big things with Mikael Cunningham to me is, can he make those consistent throws in the intermediate level? He got a little wild on some of those. But if he can fix those things and become more consistent, I mean, I think he's a guy that can go in the draft. I mean, he's plenty, you know, people talk about size. I mean, he's 6'1". That's plenty of height. I mean, it's not like you have to be 6'4 anymore.
Right.
And that athleticism, I think, will help him. So, I mean, I think he's the guy that if I'm a Louisville fan, I mean, you got to be excited for the potential of where he can go after what we saw him do in the bowl game and even the games before that. He started to grow. I mean, just every single week he got better. I think he could really become a star. As for the record, I don't think so. I mean, if they win 7 games after a bowl game, I can say, hey, maybe a little bit of disappointment, but I think people really need to kind of go back to where they were before the season started last year. I mean, you know, Bill Connolly, he's an ESPN guy now. He used to be with SB Nation. He talked about how people need to look at year zero for new coaching hires. And I thought that was really cool because there are plenty of programs. You take over that program, the first year doesn't count. You just got to throw it out. You know, and honestly, if we're being realistic,
don't throw it out.
Last year was year zero. I mean, it turned out though, so much better, but it was year zero. That should not have happened.
It's right. So funny you say that because last year, I think I don't know who it was. It might have been Bill Connolly, but somebody wrote an article ranking all the new coaches and labeling them in tiers. And somebody, and he put Scott Satterfield in the year zero. And I took it like as an offense. Like, I mean, Louisville's got talent. They have pieces. They just need a coach who actually cares.
Yeah, but I think that win. One thing that kind of got lost is how bad that roster was from a number standpoint. And in a normal situation, you're going to lose one or two guys to injury. And they also had really good injury luck. I mean, Juwan Pass went down for the season, but that was about it. I mean, they were really healthy outside of that. Rush East went down late. Makai missed a game and a half. But realistically, they were in a position where if you lost two guys, if you lost a 2-2 Atwell to an ankle injury, or you lost a Dez, or you lost a guy, Makai lost for the season – it's not the same. So I think that was kind of part of it. But at the same time, I think it was fair. Well, what they took over, you kind of look at that as year zero. So I think this next coming year, I expect them eight wins is kind of the floor for me. I think that's as low as they'll get. But if they go out and they lose 4 games to Clemson, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech, and somebody random in there, or Virginia maybe, I don't think that's a bad year. I think that's something that they can build off of. I mean, I think that would be great. I would take that. That's, to me, that 8-9 wins is where they've been in the ACC. They still haven't won 10 games yet. So it's kind of hard to be disappointed if they don't win 10 games. I mean, you're still around where they've been.
Right. And the fact that, you know, we won games last year, obviously, that we shouldn't have. I mean, we went into 19th ranked Wake Forest, you know, and won it with, you know, White Boy Conley sprinting down 40 yards for the TD, which, by the way, I still think, you know, me and Jacob talked about it. What a moment for him. And like, that's one of those you remember the rest of your life. But also, in terms of clock management, that would if he would have slid around like the 10 or the 5, and like, we could have totally taken a knee, and that would have been no pressure or nerves. Yeah. But no, I think the fact that you saw how many 50-50 games we were in last year, and we came out on top. Even when, you know, I didn't think personally, you know, there was a couple games I was like, I wasn't expecting us to win, that we actually did. Yeah. So I think if we just carry that momentum. Now, some people were like, oh, they could have gone either way, so you can't count that sometimes for next season. But a win's a win in my book. So like you said, year zero was so much of an overachievement. I just hope, you know, Louisville fans can just at least pull back the reins a little bit, be a little realistic for year two. You know, because when you see ESPN, you know, the leader of sports say we could go 10-2, you know, I think I like the confidence, but at the same time, I just want to pull back the reins a little bit. Yeah,
it's like analytical fact that you can be like, look at that, it's the stats. The stats are that.
So
in Satterfield, so easy to like.
So a little bit of devil's advocate is that one thing, they have so much coming back on offense. And then you have these quotes from Dwayne Leffert saying that, hey, we were vanilla. I can understand that, hey, people expect that to go further. And, you know, one thing I said, you know, I talked to, I think I was on the podcast with Mike months ago, and I told him, I said, I don't think it's crazy if someone said that they expect 10 wins. So you look at the schedule and you can see it. And I don't think that's out of the question, but at the same time, I think that's the, hey, if they get there, super happy with the way the season went. But I think if they go, they get to 8 wins, 9 wins, and they're not having, and they don't have bad losses in there, I think that's good for year two. And I think going into year three, you have the potential to really grow on that. And now the expectations to start growing.
Yeah, and I'm gonna say this right now. I'm gonna predict this. I'm getting ready to write this in the next couple of days. But if we're talking bold prediction, things that they may potentially come true, but it's kind of outlandish to make the argument. My prediction is Louisville has a chance to win 11 games, because I think that Scott Satterfield, one of the things I admired about him is when he sees an opponent for a second time after he loses, the first time his record is really good. Yeah. Of recovering from a team that he saw, watched the film, understood, okay, here's what they did. We got to stop it next year. I thought they played – if Mikael Cunningham would have been in at quarterback and he was the guy we saw throughout the season, they could have beat Notre Dame last year, because in the first half of that game, they really shot themselves in the foot with some bad turnovers, some bad defensive tackling. This year, Notre Dame loses a lot. They bring back a lot, and they're kind of like an SEC team where they got dudes everywhere, and you just know the next guy's up. But I don't put it past Scott Satterfield to be able to go in and win that football game. I really don't, especially if we're talking about a season with no fans in the building and you go up there, that you know, that place becomes a little bit different without, you know, packed full of fans. I think – it's not outlandish to think 11 could be that, but there's going to be a slip up somewhere else. Like we know as Louisville fans, 11 wins doesn't come, or 10 wins, whatever you want to call it. I should say 10 wins. Well, I need to do math. I'm not very good, but Clemson is the, I think it would be, they play 12 games. Clemson would be the one. So yeah, you could talk about losing just to Clemson.
So, yeah. I don't do predictions and all, but I've been saying it for the last couple of months. I think they beat Notre Dame. I think I 100% agree. They would have beat Notre Dame if they played Notre Dame later in the season this past year. But you're right. Notre Dame loses a lot of talent on defense. They're losing skill position guys on offense. And as well as they recruit, they're very position specific. They get a lot of really good tight ends, a lot of good offensive linemen, good quarterbacks. They haven't really done well on the defensive side of the ball recruiting wise. So you're replacing guys with not necessarily those five-star talented guys at the top of their class. They're replacing them with some lower-level guys, and they have a couple guys that are really talented on defense. But if I'm taking Louisville's offense against Notre Dame's defense, give me Louisville all day. And if it's a shootout, I think Louisville showed last year that they can keep scoring against anybody.
Yeah, and Alex, I've told you, not to cut you off here, but I've told you several times, point me the team on next year's schedule that's not Clemson that can outscore Louisville. That's the thing that I'm going to say going into the season. Point me and show me another offense who can – point for point, play for play, outscore Louisville. It's very few. It's very few. Well,
and the only one you could think of besides Clemson was going to be, you know, like a Wake Forest from last year. And we even showed from last year's, you know, team with that first-year defense of Brian Brown and first-year offense of Satterfield. I mean, they still just did a shootout and still won it. So, I mean, they've already proven the concept that they can win a shootout, and it's only going to get that much better in year two. But my other point is going to be, we're also playing Clemson at a very opportunistic time. And I think that's a, you know, that yes, it's still Clemson, and, you know, they're knocking. They're literally like asking other five stars to decommit to bring in better five stars. And, you know, like, I wish I had that issue sometimes, but
it's 100% true. I mean, that's what's so ridiculous is that they're like, oh, you know, was it the Flow kid from out in California? They're like, yeah, we don't really have room for you, so you might just want to find another school. And he's like, all right, I guess I'm going to Oregon. And it's like, dude, like, the top linebacker in the country, like, yeah, we don't have room for you. Like, imagine being the coach that had to make that call and, like, do it with a straight face. That's insane. But, I mean, that's at the level there are right now. But I do, like, you're right, though. They have all these teams have pieces. They have to plug new guys in. They have to change things around. Louisville doesn't have that issue, in my opinion, on both sides of the ball. The guys they lost on defense, they should be perfectly fine putting another guy in there. They have experience. Even at, right. You know, Kane Pass is probably the one guy that when they plug another guy in there, it's going to be a guy with less experience. But at defensive line, yeah, they're going to have some younger guys in there. But Tabarius Peterson's back. Dana Kennard's back. Those guys played. They started games last year. So you have less of a concern of, hey, we're taking a stud player and we got to find a guy to replace him. A lot of these teams on the schedule, that's what they're doing. And Louisville just doesn't really have that.
Yeah, and I would make the argument, and I've said this a couple of weeks ago talking with Presley, who wrote about it for our site, was when you look at Clemson, I would say that outside of North Carolina, and it was only for a half, but Louisville played them better than anybody on their schedule in the regular season. Louisville left 21 points on the field against Clemson in the first half. Tutu Atwell dropped two touchdown passes in the first down, or in the first half. Where Alex, I think you and I went to that game together, where it was unbelievable the number of mistakes. Louisville could have been up at one point 28-7. They picked off Trevor Lawrence twice in the end zone.
Flustered him. I mean, it was so frustrating because you get Trevor Lawrence off balance and he's real flustered, and then it's like, okay, you got to take advantage of it, and it never happened. So yeah, I agree, man.
And it was a couple of runs by ETN that kind of broke open that game. But even the play at the end of the first half where Louisville could have had a pick in the end zone, I mean, that's the Clemson effect, right? You just get a play where the Clemson receiver is just he Devontae Parker, somebody else. Like, that's what happens.
I mean, you got a 6'4 guy that's just, you know, has a 44-inch vertical, and you're like, what are you going to do about that? And even more than that, throughout their entire game, they really handled their passing attack really well. Clemson had that play, and they had the Amari Rodgers play where Rush East, you know, he slipped out of a tackle from Rush East and had a long play. Outside of that, Louisville kept everything in front of them, and they really just couldn't handle Travis Etienne. But, you know, I think the offense played okay. They missed opportunities, and then it got to a point where they got – discouraged and behind. And when you're at that point, you're playing against a defending national champion, that stuff starts to come into play. But I think that they played them well. I thought they played Notre Dame really well. Florida State is a game they should have won. I mean, and you know, then you have the other games that were just complete debacles, Miami and UK. But I think outside of, like, those two games, I thought they were in or at least showed promise in every game they played. And going into that season, I wouldn't have expected that at all.
Yeah, I think the big thing that's going to determine whether or not we have a real shot at Clemson, because everybody knows, you know, like, even coming off of whether you won the championship or not, like, getting to that level year in, year out, you know, they kind of start slow sometimes. And so we could catch them. But the big thing is going to be, one, how far along is the defense going to be early on in the season? I think that's going to be a huge determining factor, because we know the offense is going to be explosive. They know, like, the guys on offense know the offense is going to be explosive. They know what they're doing. So it's really just going to be, you know, to Jacob's point, how many points can we score, but how many good plays can the defense make to help us out and win those bigger games, not just the games we already should win. But the other thing I want to go back to talking about Mikhail so much tonight is, I think he has the potential to have a tremendous season, but I'm terrified that he's not going to have the longevity to do an entire season with the hits he was taking last year on some of the runs. Yeah. You know, call it unlucky, call it what you want, but either way, he needs to show me first that he can sustain a season of just health first and foremost, because the team's only going to go as far as Mikhail's going to go. With him taking all the first string snaps. But yeah, I mean, like, I can't have him injured for this offense to be as efficient as possible.
Yeah. And that brings up a great point. And the question, this is in the terms of topics, this is probably at the bottom of the totem pole here. But who's the backup quarterback next year? Is it Juwan Pass or is it Evan Connolly? What do you do there? Because you can make the argument for both of them. I'm not sure Juwan Pass will be on the roster when the season starts. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah. Nobody wants to stay for a backup season if they don't have to. So, I make the argument Juwan Pass makes the most sense as a backup, and if he's willing to stay, you've got a guy who can step in and make do if you have to.
It's tough because we got such a small sample of Juwan under this new staff. I thought he ran the ball well, which is great, but that's not really what they need out of the quarterback position. So he was still kind of erratic. You know, you get the Juwan Pass, or you get such a boom or bust when the ball leaves his hand. I mean, he can drop. I mean, I've seen, especially going back to open practices and just watching the quarterbacks, this kid can really just drop the ball in a bucket, and then he can overthrow a guy by like 15 yards who's running wide open. And
it's the ball just straight into the dirt.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. So I think that's the tough part. But, you know, you look at how Mikael Cunningham improved. You look at how Evan Connolly played as a true freshman, and you've got to give credit to the staff and say, hey, maybe they are doing a good job with these guys. So I don't know. I mean, Juwan graduated the other day. You know, there's a potential that he might have just been waiting for that to decide to transfer after he graduated, so he won't have to sit out. I don't really know. Nobody really knows. But I think that, in my opinion, the backup spot, you got to go long term. And I think Evan Connolly is a guy. I think he's shown enough. But at the same time, it's kind of a good problem to have. You have a couple options. So that's a positive, but I mean, even with a small sample size we saw with Juwan Pass, he's just too erratic, and I don't know if you really want that if you need a guy to come in and win games for you.
And I also don't – I mean, just to counter Jacob's point, he might not leave because both him and Mikael clearly saw the need for multiple quarterbacks last season, because those guys literally had to rely on each other half the season. Like, in half the games, we had 2 to 3 guys playing quarterback. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I think if anybody understands that, hey, yes, Mikael's the starting quarterback, but, you know, is he going to play every single snap as quarterback? Maybe not, because we clearly saw that, like, it was amazing how Satterfield before the season was like, I want 5 quarterbacks in my room. And everyone's like, well, that's kind of ridiculous. Like, all right, a little
needy,
in my opinion.
Who would want to be the quarterback of the wheel there? Like, right, I'll be like, this guy.
They're
sure.
Like, what do you want? And then, I mean, first half of the Notre Dame game. I mean, like, boom, you get an injury. Mikael, awesome for a couple games. Boom, injury. And then you're already on your freshman, Evan Connolly. Mm-hmm. And so Louisville fans are like, holy crap. All right, this guy kind of might be right. And Satterfield's over here after the game. He's like, I mean, I told you guys we need 5. Like, I wasn't making that number up for a reason.
This kind of off subject a little bit, but that was why I got so frustrated with people when Chuba Purdy decided to flip. People are like, oh, we're fine. We got T-Web. And I'm like, do you guys not understand depth? Like, the coaches have been saying this stuff since they got here, like depth. And they wanted 2 quarterbacks to get to the number that they wanted. And we literally just ended the season where we saw the quarterbacks, how valuable they are. And people are like, oh, they'll be fine without them. I'm like, the numbers matter. Like, you got to get that. And I honestly do think, I know they're looking at 1 quarterback, but they're still offering guys. I think they might still try to take 2 quarterbacks in this next class.
I would like to personally see a transfer thrown in at some point, because you try to make two kids coming out of high school who think that they can go and be a starter somewhere, and you tell them, you guys are going to come in at the exact same time, you're going to go through the exact same thing, and we're not sure who's going to be the red shirt, who's going to be, you know, the one that might play, but, like, we're going to have to figure this out. Like, I would not want to be a part of that. I want to go find a school where I can be the guy. I can be the freshman in the class. At some point, I'd like to see Louisville throw a transfer in the mix there, because that's where you can find a guy who could potentially be a backup. Yeah, and not the backup quarterback. Like, if we're having a backup quarterback conversation in May, it's going to be a long summer for content, because it's like, I know eventually we're going to run out of things to talk about. But I just think that's one of those things where I've been interested to see why they've not taken any transfers. Like, that's the one thing I'm kind of still unsure about. They've taken a couple of graduate transfers, but I personally, at quarterback, I think that's how you kind of throw some roster mix up in there. Let me ask you this. We'll end the show on this here. I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about the NFL draft after Mekhi Becton got drafted. I'm going to ask you a two-part question here. The first one is going to be overall. The second one will be specific to a position group. And Alex, I'd like your opinion on this as well. when you look at the 2021 NFL draft, who is the first Louisville Cardinal off the board? Because I think there's as many as five or six guys who could be drafted next year, maybe even more depending on where sophomores to juniors go in development. Who's the first guy off the board next year?
Ooh, that's tough. That's a good one.
Okay, I think I might have my guy.
I'll go a little off the beaten path. The guy that I think is going to – he's also the guy that I think is going to completely shock people this year, Caleb Chandler.
Dude, see, this is where I want to go first. Like, that's
funny because that's we hadn't even talked the before layer that question. You just answered it. So we've essentially wrapped it up there.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, you have the Dwayne Ledford factor, but you also – I think he's been insanely overshadowed because he played right next to Mekhi Becton. But if you watch Mekhi Becton's highlights – and you kind of look around, you're going to see a lot of Caleb Chandler burying people, pushing people out of the screen, just like Mekhi Becton did. He's got the athleticism that Mekhi Becton kind of showed. I don't think he's necessarily going to run the 40 like Mekhi did. But that was a part of his game that I think that helped him get on the field a couple years ago. And he came in as a replacement late in the season, I think, two seasons ago. But he was so green. Like, he was missing blocks left and right. He couldn't control himself when he was out in space. I think Ledford's really improved on that, and I think that's going to get better. And I think he's a guy that's going to – guards don't go so high, but I really do think he's going to be one of the top three guards in the whole draft. And I think he ended up going maybe in the middle of the second round, which I think might be around where we start to see Louisville players going.
Yeah, Alex, what do you – if Caleb Chandler was your answer, who's your next guy then?
No,
which I don't necessarily believe that was his answer. I'm not.
No,
gonna lie.
I swear to.
I know
I
him
literally
to try to be like, yeah, that was my answer.
No. Okay, so I had the 2020 Louisville football roster up on my computer right in front of me with the offensive line, and I literally had Caleb Chandler highlighted because we had talked about him just like last week. But between that, I think the next one was going to be for me, Tutu Atwell, if he can continue to sustain success and a little bit of weight gain. From the simple fact that we're seeing Hollywood Brown, I think has tremendously helped him out. You're seeing all these smaller guys really, succeed in the NFL the last couple of seasons and excel. But also, I think Jacob made a really good point to me last week about Rondale Moore, depending on, his success and where he goes in the draft. Like, I really do think, that's a great point, is that his success is kind of, Tutu's really watching that closely, because if Rondale Moore gets drafted really high, I think that's a great sign for Tutu, because people think Rondale's taller and bigger. Their measurables are really, really similar. Yeah. I mean, Tutu's a little bit slimmer, obviously, but he's more of a straight line, speedster. But I definitely think he's got a shot.
Tutu is that you see Satterfield's offense has some NFL counterparts that are kind of similar, whether it be the Rams and some of the other offenses. So you're seeing a guy who in that wide zone, it's all play action. It's all based off of doing something off of something else. And it's the whole point of the receivers or what you're looking for in receivers is to get them in one-on-one matchups. And you talk about Hollywood Brown is probably the best comparison in my opinion, because he is pure speed. Like, get behind the defense. You can't cover me one-on-one. And if you can run the ball on your offense, which the Ravens do really well, which we all saw last year, you can create opportunities with great matchups with him. And I think that's where Tutu's value is, because that's what they're doing right now. I mean, it's all about getting him in a favorable matchup, which is literally just one guy. It doesn't have to be, oh, we got to get him against a safety or against a linebacker. Tutu will run away from anyone. So I think that's where his value is in the NFL, and I think these offenses are showing that that's the new kind of thing, is this wide zone scheme that luckily as Louisville fans, we get to see that, and I think we saw what it can do last year, and I think we're going to see even more this year.
Yeah, and we've got quite a bit of time. It feels like it should be August, July at this point, but we've still got months ahead to talk about the same things we've been talking about for 3 months, and I think that the 2020
way to frame
football
that
team,
up positively.
Well, the 2020 football team could be the most over-dissected thing ever for Louisville sports, because we're going to have 12 months, it seems like, to get ready for that. Keith, I appreciate you joining. I know you've got a couple of articles coming up in the next few days, including your wish list for the defense. So make sure you check that out on Card Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter. I don't have the Twitter handle pulled up, so I will let you plug that, Keith.
So what is it? Keith underscore win. I think, is that it? Yeah, that's, there you go. I don't know if there's
No, that's one of those things. I've never been able to remember my own Twitter handle, and I always feel so weird telling people what it is because nobody's going to go follow it anyways.
I hope it was accurate, and then he just, like, really, really, like, played that off as, like, a humble, like, I'm not sure what my Twitter account is.
When you get to my profile, the pinned tweet has 25,000 retweets, so should be under deputy as well.
Should be under deputy editor, I think. Yeah. It's right there under my title.
So we'll have Keith on plenty more as we get ready for football, but we thank you guys for tuning in.